Columbus.
Columbus, Ohio. And Jack, how old are you?
57.
And what's your educational background? They always ask.
Well, I've had 2 years of college. I've had an associate degree in electrical engineering. And I spent 4 years in the Air Force, and I've had several there in air traffic control, radio operator, meteorology, all the things associated with air traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a pilot's license and an instrument rating. So I'm not unfamiliar with the different types of aircraft. In fact, the time that this event we're going to discuss happened, I had just gotten out of the Air Force and was hired as an air traffic controller out to Loch Bonnier Bay. And that tower and airways and direction finding. And the night this object that I sighted was the night of the day that this Captain Mantrell was killed. Do you remember when he was killed in Kentucky?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know whether you're familiar with the direction finding unit or not, but it's done with the VHF radio. You have a directional antenna that you rotate as the aircraft's transmitting, and you can tell the direction that he is from the base by the null that you get. So this direction finding station usually is located out just off of the runway. It's not connected or close to any of the buildings like the tower or the airways or weather station. So the night that I was on duty, I was in the direction finding shack, which is about a mile from the other buildings, operations and airways and the tower, which is about two-thirds to three-quarters of the way down the north-south runway at Lockford. And before we'd go on duty, we always stop by the operations and get a copy of the weather. And all the aircraft flying, military aircraft, flying in the vicinity of Columbus would call and give a position report. Now, Airways was the one that officially took the position report. If he was busy, they'd call a lot of times for me to give the weather to him and verify their position. Nights that in the wintertime, when it was overcast, and they'd be flying over the overcast, they'd just check to see that they was a certain direction from Columbus, south, north, or east, or west. So this night, the overcast was 1,200 feet. Now, I remember this just as though it was yesterday. I know what the weather was. 1,200 feet, heavy overcast, with a 10-mile-an-hour southwest wind. And it was dark. And inside the shack, I never turned the lights on because the illumination of all the dials and the meters and everything was sufficient for just sitting in there listening to the radio or whatever. The only time I'd turn the light on would be when an aircraft would be in trouble and call me for an emergency. Well, then I'd turn the lights on so I'd be sure and get in the right heading.
Mm-hmm.
So I was laying there on my back, just looking out the window. And practically right over my head was at a 30-degree angle from vertical. Down through the overcast comes this great big round red object, and the instant that I glimpsed it, and I was looking in that direction, I thought it was an aircraft falling in flames. So I jumped off of the box and started start to reach for the mic or the telephone, and I see that it isn't an aircraft. I know by the time 2 seconds has passed, it's not an aircraft. The tower called me before I even got a chance to call him, and he said, "What the hell is that out there over your station?" And I told him, "I don't know." I said, it's just a great big round red ball. So I tell him to call Airways. He's got a squawk box there. You just push on the button and holler down to Airways, so it's pass backwards and forth communications without reaching for the telephone. So he calls the Airways operator, and him and the captain, which the meteorologist that night, they come to the door and they look at it. So one of them's here, one of them's here, and I'm way out here. And it stops just as it comes through the overcast and hovers there in the air, and there's no sound that you can hear at all. And it don't stand perfectly stationary now. It maneuvers around, makes goes 100 feet or kind of circles, and it just is maneuvering around in the air without any great distance. And after it's been there for about 5 minutes, and all the time I'm trying to contact another aircraft on the radio, and so is the tower. We've got different frequencies, so we're trying to call an aircraft to take a pass through there and tell us what it is. Well, it starts from an absolute, perfectly stationary position and makes a circle of the entire base. Now, the north-south runway is 1 mile long, and there's at least 3/4 or so of a mile from the end of the runway to the limits of the base at the north, and there's about 1/4 mile or so maybe to the south. So this makes this object make a circle of better than 6 miles. Since it's 2 miles in diameter, it has to be more than 6 miles. Now it does that, and we timed it. I did. It accelerated to the speed of excess of 1,000 miles an hour, comes back, and stops instantly. It doesn't slow down, go on any brakes, and coast lift off. It comes, just stops like it run into a wall.
How many times did it circle the base?
Just once.
Just once.
Just one big circle. And when it comes back, it's still right over my head, but it has drifted to the southwest.
So you're at the south end of the runway?
Yeah, I'm on the east side of the runway by about, I'll say, 200, maybe 300 feet, between 2 and 3. And when it came back and stopped and maneuvered, I call it drifting, which actually it wasn't really drifting. It just had moved to the southwest. Now, that's against the wind. And since I'm from the southwest, and when it got down nearly to the edge of the base, just a little past the end of the runway, it descended to the ground vertically, just came clear to the ground, and stayed at the ground 10, maybe 15 seconds, and rose vertically back up to just under the overcast. And we had gotten in contact with an airplane by that time that was coming from Wright Field. And he said he couldn't see anything. He was too far out yet. Well, this is an assumption, but I think the object itself detected this airplane approaching Lockton, because just before the airplane arrived at Lockton, it went back up into the overcast and disappeared.
Never saw it again.
No. It didn't change color, other than the fact that if you have to be real critical to say yes, it did, but I assume that if it did get dimmer, it was wisps of clouds that was gone between me and it. that I didn't see the thing get brighter and dimmer like some people have described them. And I eliminate first, you can see the full moon had it been out, so it can't be the moon or the planet Venus or some of the other astronomical objects that they're talking about, that they always say you're seeing something. It can't be a balloon, because a balloon would not drift against the wind. And it can't be a light, because if it had been a light, and when it made the circle of the base, it would have elongated as it got out away from me and would change shape. And it didn't change shape, other than the fact you could tell. It would just be like if you struck a flashlight like that. You'd think the light looks like it's longer, but it isn't. Well, it went fast enough that your eye retained a little bit of that image behind it, but there was no exhaust. And my estimate as to size of it, I base on the fact that I know how high it was. I know how far away it was from me, 1,200 feet. If I hadn't had the weather report right in my hand, and it would have been a clear night, I couldn't have told you how big it was. But since I know that it was 1,200 feet, plus a very little, since it was at a 30-degree angle, it wouldn't be much more than 12, then I can tell you reasonably close to how big it was. And it was bigger than a one-car garage, and it wasn't as big as my two-car garage. So the object, when it came down to the ground, was even closer than 1,200 feet. And I would estimate it less than half that. Because if you take the 30-degree angle from here to the ceiling, it's 8 feet, but if you drop a string from that 30-degree angle, it's going to hit out here not quite half 8 feet. So it was a good bit closer to me when it came to the ground than it was when I first sighted it. But I went out and looked to see if the grass was burned, mashed, or if there was prints of where it landed, and there wasn't. Now, nobody that I know of, maybe the Army did, or the Air Force, take some radioactive measurements, but not while I was there. Mm-hmm. There was somebody on duty 24 hours a day, so if they had it, I'm sure that somebody would have known about it. But they flew us to Wright Field 3 different times for interviews when the Project Blue Book was on. And they wouldn't tell us anything. You know, they did question you for a half an hour or so, but if you asked them a question, well, just as well ask that dog.
Do you know the names of the people that were with you that night?
Hmm?
Do you know the names of the people that were with you that night?
I know the name of one of them is Frank Isaac.
What was his position?
He was the Airways operator.
What's Airways operator? That's the name of something.
Airways is the official position that gives the weather and takes the position reports of aircraft. And if you're flying from one airport, we'll say if you're flying from Dayton to New York, your destination is New York, or all places in between that you can contact, you give a position report. So if something happens, they can say, well, you checked in at Loughran Air Base at such and such a time, and your estimated time of arrival at some point east of here would be such and such, and you don't arrive there, well, then they know that you have passed. You're going east of Loughran, so this eliminates a lot of search area.
Was he civilian or military?
Huh?
Was he civilian or military?
Civilian. We were all civilian.
You were all civilian?
Yeah.
How many witnesses were there then?
Four? Well, there'd be four total.
What did I count?
The captain, which was a meteorologist, and this Frank Isley, which was in Airways that night. And since we've gotten back to discussing this, I have forgotten the tower, the saw that was in the tower. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've forgotten the names of nearly all the fellows that I've worked with out there. You do that, you'll even forget the fellows at the Battelle in a couple or 3 years after you leave
oh,
there.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeah.
And that's been almost 30 years ago.
Yeah. You say you were taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Who did you talk to over there? Do you remember?
I don't remember whether it was Ruppelt or not now. In fact, we talked to, I'd say, at least five different individuals, all officers. And there was captains, lieutenants, and majors. And you'd talk to one a while, and you'd go out, and you'd sit there and twiddle your thumbs, and another would come in and talk to you. And maybe you'd go get you a drink of water or go to the bathroom or something and hang around for a half an hour, and they'd call you in and talk to you some more, you know, to, I suppose, to see if you're going to change your story, or maybe you could think of something else you could add. There's nothing you can add to it, nothing that I could subtract to it. I mean, it's relatively simple as far as I'm concerned, but I saw it. It came down through the overcast, and it made those, if you want to call them erratic, maneuvers in the air, which didn't seem to be erratic from the standpoint of lack of intelligence. It looked to me like the thing was intelligently controlled. Maybe there was nobody aboard, but at least it wasn't a haphazard sort of a performance it put on, and definitely it wasn't haphazard by it making a perfect circle of the entire base. And for what reason it would do that would be beyond to even speculate on. I don't know why it would accelerate and then decelerate from a perfect standstill to 1,000 miles an hour and from 1,000 miles an hour back to zero.
How long a time did it take to go around the base?
I forget the seconds that it took, but everything you do in the Army, in the Air Force, it becomes a habit to time it. For instance, your training when you're taking instrumentation, instrument flying. In case your instrument goes out, you don't know how far you turn. Suppose your compass and gyro both goes out. If you know what your heading was when you stop or when your instrument malfunctioned, and you want to turn 90 degrees to the left, you count at one needle width turn, you're turning 3 degrees a second. So you count 1,001, 1,002, 1,000. You've heard of people doing that.
Mm-hmm.
This was what the way I counted it. Now, I wasn't excited to the point that I'd say 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, or, you know, speed it up. And I wasn't so paralyzed that I slowed it way down. If you do something for a number of years, you don't change it. I counted it. I didn't look at my watch because it was dark and I was outside looking at it. By that time, I wasn't back inside. I had the telephone pulled off the door, the cord, and was talking to the tower. And I'd even lay the phone down and walked over towards the runway closer to try to see if I could, see whether it was metal, or whether it was just a light, if I could tell if it was solid or what. I wanted a better look. But we calculated it at the time that it wasn't less, and I can't say that it was 1,100 or 1,200, but I remember that it was in excess of 1,000 miles an hour that the thing made the trip around the base. Now, what it would take in the seconds, I suppose I could figure in a minute or two.
What time did this happen?
It was about 10 after 7 in the evening, 5 to 10 after when it first appeared, and it was visible for a little better than 20 minutes. So during this time, we made all the calls we could and was trying to get this captain to get an aircraft off of the ground right there at the base. there's plenty of pilots he could have called that would run out, I'm sure, and gotten an airplane off the ground and went up 1,200 feet to look at it, but he didn't.
Any reason why?
Officers don't have to give you any reason why. So
they didn't do that.
Yeah. Now, whether he was just too dumb or scared or too worried or didn't want to take it on himself or do something like that, whatever his reasons were, I don't know. But had I been in his position and had known a flying officer, I'd have got a hold of him fast and I said, even if you're on the potty, just pull up your pants and go take a look at that, because this is something you don't see every day. And I'm sure he could have gotten a pilot in the air before the thing disappeared, but the possibility remains that had there been an aircraft started its engine on the ground and started down the runway, it would have left sooner. Since this aircraft coming from Dayton was nearly there before it went back up into the overcast, and I'm sure it detected that airplane coming.
Was it light at that time, or was it dark?
Dark.
It was dark. Completely dark?
Yeah.
Completely dark.
After 7 o'clock in wintertime, it's dark with that heavy and overcast.
Exactly. You say it was the same day as the Mantell case. Do you know what day that was? Can you pin that down, please?
I think it was something like the 27th of February in 48, I believe.
How
exact date now, I can't be positive.
What day of the week?
Don't even remember that.
You don't.
Because we worked 7, 9 days straight, and we'd work a short week, and then we'd work a 4-day week. And we'd work 4 days and get off 4 days. The reason was that we were, we couldn't schedule the personnel so that somebody was on duty 24 hours a day, just working a 5-day week or such. And we had to do it in a method that they would do 7 or 8 days straight, then a shorter week, and then a real short week.
Okay, so you're sure it was the night of the day Mantell had his accident. How could you pin that down?
Well, because we heard of Mantell's death. And all of it was on our communications.
That night?
Yeah, that day after
that
it happened. Yeah.
So you heard on the communications the day that you saw this, it was the same day.
Yeah.
And so you had that in your mind, I take it.
I didn't have it in mind at the time I seen it then.
Okay.
I wasn't thinking about
it.
Okay. But I figured after the event that it possibly was the same object that he was chasing. And it could have been easy enough, because it's not far from Kentucky up here to Columbus.
Mm-hmm. If you held something out at the end of your arm, did you try that to see, see how big it was? Was it the size of a nickel or quarter? No idea on that. You say you went back to Wright-Patterson, what, 3 times?
Yeah, I think, if I remember right, they flew us over there 3 different times.
Did they send a plane here
they'd
for you?
They'd either have a plane come here to get us, which I don't know. Now, whether it was a plane here that took us over and brought us back, or whether the plane came from there over here to get us and took it over there and then brought us back, but they flew us both ways. And they interviewed us together and separately. And
did they ever say what it was?
Huh?
Did they ever conclude what it was? Give you
not
any idea?
Not they didn't.
They didn't make
I
any
think
suggestions?
They wrote it off like they do a lot of the other things. They write off it to some weather inversion or some equally silly explanation that anybody that's a thinking individual at all would know that it can't be that. Now, if it all is hallucinations and mistaken, like looking at the planet Venus and different degrees of confusion. The airline pilots are seeing this. If they're that nutty, they'd be grounded. They surely wouldn't let an airplane pilot take off a few million-dollar aircraft with 400 people aboard and fly them even the length of the city block if he's having hallucinations. And there's been many an airplane pilot that's seen these. And a pilot has, with any experience at all, I mean, with an object that's flying right alongside his wing, it's bigger than and accelerating and doing circles around his aircraft, and maybe half of the people aboard are seeing the same thing. So the explanations that they're making are so, well, they're so ridiculous that I can't see why even a kindergarten kid can't see them, let alone the puppet. My only real explanation for the government taking the attitude that it has, that they're afraid that people that are religious will find out that we are not the only life there is in the universe, and God created somebody else besides us. And if this is the best creation that he's able to come up with, he came up with a pretty poor one.
Do you know who you talked to over there? Not necessarily. You indicated you weren't sure who they were by name. Do you know what who they worked with? Was it
that was with this Project Blue Book?
You were sure of that?
Yeah, I'm sure of that.
Okay.
But who was in charge over there? I don't know. And who the interviewers was? I don't know, because I'm sure that they introduced themselves at the time. The courtesy, you know, us being taking any notes or anything, I didn't, and I'm sure the other two people, now the captain, didn't go with it over there. It was only the three, Frank Isley and the tower operator. Now, he could have been interviewed separately, and we didn't know it, but
he didn't believe it.
I don't know whether he was interviewed or not, for sure.
Let me get right. Could you describe the object a little more? Talk about what it looked like. You said it was
perfectly round, just as round as a basketball. It's a perfect sphere.
It was a sphere and not a disc seen.
Well, if it was a disc, it always kept either the bottom or the top side to us and was setting on edge. Now, I couldn't say for sure that it wasn't, but it would have had to have been setting on edge and the flat side facing me at all times. And it surely wouldn't do that with its maneuvering around in its complete circle of the base and coming down to the ground.
Did you see anything on the object, like markings, like doors, windows?
Nothing that protruded, such as an antenna, no knobs such that you could interpret as landing gear, and nothing that I could see that looked like a porthole or a window of any kind. Nothing. It looked like a completely smooth surface that was heated to a color red or orange than that.
But it was kind of a red-orange. How bright was it?
Fairly bright. This fellow the other night asked me if it illuminated the ground when it came down to the ground. And I don't know whether it did or not, because I was at the same level as it, and it being down at that distance, I didn't see any illumination on the ground. And had I been higher than it, such as treetop height, looking down, then maybe I could have seen some illumination on the ground, but being that my eye level was the same as it, I didn't. It would have had to have lit up a quite a large area for me to have seen.
Was it? Was there any snow on the ground at this time?
No.
Do you know what the temperature was?
No, I don't remember, but it was not a cold night. It was probably cold enough to see your breath out. The only thing that I remember about the night was what I considered important at the time was the absolute fact the overcast was 1,200 feet.
Was it solid?
Yeah.
No breaks?
Definitely solid. You couldn't have seen the full moon had it been above it.
You know how thick it was? Do you remember?
No. They don't give you... They didn't at that time give us the height for the
clouds.
Overcast and thickness of just above the ground.
When this object went around the base or at any other time, did it pass behind any object?
No.
Or when did it pass behind any object?
No. This is a thing that landed between me and a fence. There was a fence at the edge of the base.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't see the fence. And since it was so dark on the ground, when it came clear to the ground, since I couldn't see the fence in front of it, I assumed it landed on this side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, had it landed on the other side of the fence, it was bright enough that I could have seen the fence
and so
before it.
Could you describe the motion that it made before it went around the base and then after it came back?
The motions, it just wanted to mosey around just like this, maybe drift a little that way, sideways, and back over closer to me, and then a little bit forward, and then back, but none of them was fast. It just looked like that it was maybe wanting to stay in that general area.
And no pattern, if you could just say.
No pattern at all. It was just, that's why I say it was erratic, but usually when you talk about erratic, you're talking about something quick.
Yeah.
But this was a slow movement, backwards and forward.
Okay, from the time you saw it come down, did it immediately begin these slow movements?
Did it do what now?
When you first saw it, it came below the cloud bank.
Yeah.
Did it start making the movements immediately?
Stopped right there, dead, just like it had lit right here in the floor, and it stayed right there stationary for...
For how long?
Maybe between 1 and 2 minutes, or something like
okay,
that.
And then what did
then it started maneuvering around. It came over closer to me, and then it went farther away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't do it in a straight line. They were curved lines, just...
Always curved, seemed it?
Yeah, it looked like it... Well, it could have probably made some straight ones, but mm-hmm. they would be short straight ones, because mm-hmm. it stayed within an area of less than a city block square, one of these city blocks here. It never went out of that area while it was making these maneuvers until it decided to make this circumference of the base.
So how long did it make the maneuvers before it made the circumference, time-wise?
Well, if it was in sight for 20 minutes, it was visible stationary at the start for, say, 2 minutes. It made these maneuvers around for a while and then stopped stationary again and was stationary for a couple more minutes. So it took it some time to come to the ground and time to go back up, and it was stationary after it went back up. So you'd have to just guess at the time. And I didn't even try to time it.
I see.
As to the length of time it made the maneuvers. But
so it went around the base and came back to about its original...
Right back to its original position, which is right practically over my head at a 30... head at a 30 degree.
And how long did it stay there roughly?
Before when it came back from?
Yeah.
Well, I'd guess 3 or 4 minutes
okay.
before it came down to the ground.
Uh-huh.
It stopped and stayed stationary and may have moved 20 to 50 feet at that time, because it didn't necessarily look like it was screwed into position on a board or something. But when it did come down, it just started descending vertically like that, just perfectly straight, like an elevator would. And I would say that 15 seconds would definitely cover the length of time that it was on the ground. And maybe 10 would.
Very quick.
So I would estimate 10, 12 seconds that it stayed on the ground and then rose vertically the same way back up. And when it went up in cast, the overcast bottom side of it was evidently thin in places, because I saw it as it was going up into the overcast for, we'll say, three lengths of it, if you want to call a sphere having a length.
Okay, I see. I know what you mean.
So I could see it about that long and see it disappear gradually into the overcast, even though that it went up at a rate. It went into the overcast. When it hit the first of it, I could see overcast between me and it.
Did it reflect light on the overcast above it?
No. No.
It didn't reflect on the overcast above it?
No, that was a little bit peculiar, because had it been shining a light out from itself, as bright as it looked to me, it looked like that it would be illuminating something around. But all I could do is I could just see it through the overcast. If it illuminated the overcast, it had to be just right next to it. And I couldn't,
but you didn't see it, but illuminated the overcast. Did it go straight from the ground right up into the overcast?
Up and stopped below the overcast.
For
stayed there maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And then went up into the overcast. And all this time, I'm on the radio. I've got a microphone in one hand and telephone in the other. And I'm laying them down and I'm watching that thing and trying to, all frequencies. I'm inside and back outside, you know, trying to contact an aircraft. That's the only one we contacted, was coming from Wright Field. And he said he couldn't see anything because he's too far out.
How long after the object disappeared did this aircraft
arrive? Wasn't very long after the object disappeared. Well, he was over the base. So he must have been maybe West Jefferson when the object went back up into the overcast.
You remember what kind of aircraft that was that came in?
I think it probably was a C-47. I know it was a bigger aircraft.
Do you remember the questions or the kinds of questions that were asked you down at Wright Patt? What kind of things were they looking for?
No, the only thing I remember was that it was a deliberate attempt, I think, on their part to try to confuse us, because when I tell you a certain part of this description, and then now like 5 minutes later you would say, that thing you said made the circle 3 miles in diameter, now you know I said two, but you would say back to me, like, this wasn't a question that they asked me now, but I mean it was this tight. They'd try to find out if I'd change my story by rewording some statement that I made. Now, you're not about to ask me if I said that the thing made a circle of base which was 3 miles in diameter, because you heard me definitely say that it was two. And it was six. But this is the kind of questions that they would come back to me with, a statement that would tend to maybe either verify the fact that my story wasn't going to change, or am I an unreliable witness? Maybe it's a good idea they did do that. I don't know. But this is the kind of questions that they came back to have you repeat something the way you said it the first time, because they had either added or subtracted from your original statement as they repeated it back to you. But you said such and such, and if it was what I said, I'd say yes. And if it wasn't what I said, I'd say no. I told them, like I'm telling you, they asked if I had, if it had an exhaust to it. And this I remember definitely. But I told them, like I told you, it appeared. The retention of your eye, mm-hmm. of a light, appeared like it had lengthened, but I'm sure that the thing didn't change shape, and it didn't change dimension in any way, but it didn't have an exhaust tail. Now, if it had an exhaust tail, not only had I been able to have seen it, I could have surely heard an exhaust. These rockets don't go up silently. And if it was not intelligently controlled, I'd be willing to say I ought to be over here in the insane asylum because it had to be intelligently controlled. Excuse me, let me get that. I don't know.
Do you remember anything else about what they asked you or what kind of information they were looking for? Do you remember? Because I know it's been a long time.
I don't recall any specific question that they asked me other than that one about having a tail, as a rocket tail, and if I could identify any features on it. And they asked me the size, and I told them, like I tell you, that my estimate of its size was based on the knowledge that I knew how far away it was. And if you know how far away something is, you can guess pretty close to its size. Or if you know its size, you can estimate roughly its distance. But you have to know one to be able to estimate the other with reasonable accuracy.
Did you turn in a written report on this, or did any of the other people?
We signed a typewritten report that they made over there. We didn't write it ourselves.
It was classified at any time?
It was classified, yeah. And we was warned not to talk about it.
For how long, a period?
Well, at the time, it impressed me as never to talk about it. But after I got away from there and figured they didn't have any more hold on me, I didn't make any particular effort to tell people other than people like Lillian Desmond or somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You want a cigarette?
No, thanks. I don't smoke.
At that time, people thought you had more than one loose screw if you started talking about UFOs.
What was the level of security, you remember?
Huh?
What level the security did they put on it?
I don't know. I know that they put it in the files over there, and there was nothing in the paper. But there has been some... since I've read like some of these fellows that have written about it have written about the event, but none of the details. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had something I wanted to ask.
At the time, had I talked about it, they could have probably fired me and done a lot of other things. I was under civil service then.
You were civil service. You were not military.
Huh?
You were not with not military. You were civil
no,
service.
No, I was a civilian employee. Civil service. I had a permanent civil service rating that I didn't want to jeopardize by talking. And if it was a military secret, I didn't want to talk, regardless of whether it would jeopardize my job or not. Mm-hmm. At the time, I didn't know, and I don't think that I would have done it any differently had I to do it over again. I just wouldn't have discussed it with anybody outside of the three of us that... were civilian employees out there, plus the captain. I mean, we could talk among ourselves, but it wasn't supposed to go any farther. In fact, the other employees, we didn't even tell them.
Mm-hmm.
We went like maybe 2 or 3 days or something like that. This is purely a guess now. I don't remember exactly. 2 or 3 days before we went the second time, and then maybe it was a week before we went the third time. But they would go over what we told them the first time.
Same people talk to you?
Well, there would be a different one maybe in and out than the first ones that talked to us. But as a whole, it would be the same ones. Same fellow seemed to be in charge all the time.
All 3 days?
Yeah.
Were they all in uniform?
Yeah, they's all in uniform.
Trying to think of anything we've missed here. Anything you can think of?
They come up with a discrepancy. That they hassled me about. And after a couple times or so, I finally didn't lose my temper completely, but I did get a little bit loud, if you want to call it that, because they pretended that they couldn't understand the conditions that I explained a certain thing to them. And I know I said, damn it, I was in a different position than the other fella, which would make my view different. You sit right there and you watch me come up here. This curvature right here, you might not be aware of how much that curve, it would look like that it it starts here and goes back here and comes down. But as it enters the overcast, if it would curve a little bit towards you as it disappeared, it would appear as a straight line to you, wouldn't it? Because its curvature would be towards you.
Did somebody else see a curvature?
But I'm over here, and the thing's this way. I'm looking at it from a 90-degree angle from what you are. So when it goes back up into the overcast, it curves like this. I noticed the curve.
Oh, you noticed the curve.
He didn't, but I did.
Oh, see? I see. You did.
And he told him that it went straight to the ground and straight back up. And when it went back up into the overcast, it went straight up. And I told him that as it entered the overcast, it entered at a heading of northwest, that it didn't go vertically straight up into the overcast. It started vertically and curved and went to the heading of northwest. Well, they tried to make one or the other of us out a liar. And I tried to explain to him, he is looking at it in a different perspective than what I am. We're 90 degrees apart. And what appeared to him to be a straight line, which is normal, if that curve isn't really pronounced, it would appear to you as a straight line vertically. But from where I'm at, 90 degrees from him, I definitely detected the curvature as it went into the overcast. Well, they hassled me about that a little bit until I said, damn it, I seen it go into the overcast in a curve, heading at a northwest, that this tower operator was looking at it from a different angle, which it appeared to him to be a straight line. Well, that, you're not supposed to talk to officers that way, but since I was a civilian, had I been a private, I wouldn't have told them what I told them.
Did that satisfy him?
I don't think so. I don't think you could have satisfied him if I'd have took off and flew myself. I just don't think at the time that they believed there was anything like that.
You looked at this site and it was 30 degrees from vertical. Which direction were you looking?
I was looking just a little bit south of west. It wasn't directly west of me, but it was very nearly west, because I was directly west of the runway, which runs north and south. And this is the runway, it's here. So it would be just a little bit south of west. And then when it made the circle, it came out close over top of me and made this complete circle of the base, came back right to its original position, which was just practically over the runway.
You were looking across the runway at it.
Well, now, I don't know whether it was looking across the runway or whether it was directly over the runway. It was so near being over the runway. It could have been a little bit on the other side, but there's no way for me to tell. I don't think you could tell an object 1,200 feet in the air whether it was directly over that building or whether it was the other side of the building or this side of the building a little bit. But from a 30-degree angle from where I was at 1,200 feet, and me being 300 feet at the very most, and probably a lot less than that, more than 200, from the runway. We were only far enough off the runway to be safe from an airplane that would maybe skid off. So what would a 30-degree angle, what would be the base of a triangle with a degree angle here and a 1,200-foot vertical?
Mm-hmm.
The base wouldn't be very long.
Which side of the runway did it land on? Across the runway from you?
Which side did it land on?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. When you
at
looked,
the end, past the
right
end at the runway.
Mm.
Which so, the runway ended, then there was a long grassy strip, and then the fence. And since I didn't see the fence when it was on the ground, I assumed that it landed this side of the fence, and that's where I looked. Now, I could have been a little more thorough, maybe, and went across the fence and looked on the other side.
But you found nothing there, either.
But I didn't see anything.
And you think it was pretty close, if not right at the end of the runway, I mean, right in line with the runway.
Yeah.
Did they tape this down, or somehow, is it right
tape
back
it,
or
you say?
Were you on tape or anything?
No.
You know? Okay, so they just took notes.
They just took it, verbaling. Thought they were doing some writing. I don't know whether he was shorthand or probably was.
Do you remember what the contents were of the reports that were circulated about Mantell that day? Was it in great
the
detail?
The reports was that he ran out of oxygen. He exceeded the safe altitude and didn't have oxygen aboard. And he was at 1,500 feet, which in itself is ridiculous. You don't go unconscious for lack of oxygen at 1,500 feet. There's been many a pilot fly at 1,500 feet, myself included, and no oxygen. And part of his transmission was, now this I won't say for sure. He either said it's gigantic and it's metallic, or he said it's monstrous and metallic. But I think he said it's gigantic and metallic.
Was this in the reports you read there that day?
Huh?
Was that in the reports you read there that day?
I didn't read them. I heard part of them.
Oh, they were coming over the radio?
Coming over the telephone and radio. They was, I'd say an hour or so of discussion after it was over. And when they found the wreckage, you know, they determined two or three days after this that he had become unconscious and the airplane disintegrated in the air because it died. Well, a P-51 don't disintegrate that easy, I don't think, just in the air. Disintegrates after it hits the ground, but I don't think that it would scatter itself over a large area.
Was this normal radio transmission you were picking up of the search?
It was a relay in it. Evidently from a tower in Kentucky, and the people that were in contact with him through our tower at Columbus. Now, how that was accomplished, I don't know. We had direct lines at the time, every place. I could punch out and call Cincinnati, direct line telephone, because a lot of times you have an emergency and I'd have to get clearance. Nada to have an airplane do a certain thing. They had to be able to run control. For example, an airplane called me one night, maybe 1 o'clock, and he was lost, and he was running low on fuel. And I didn't know what his altitude was at the time, but he was assigned a certain altitude, and Cincinnati is plotting on their map down there at a certain altitude. So when he made contact with me, he was scared. He was lost and low on fuel. So he told me what his altitude was, and I told him what his heading would be to Loughborough. And I'd get clearance for him to start a descent, so he could throttle back and start a slow descent and save his fuel. So I called Cincinnati and had an emergency. Aircraft was lost and low on fuel, and I wanted him to start a gradual descent to Loughborough, and then there the altitudes
between Lachlan and his station. If there was an aircraft, you know, they can get a hold of him and have him get out of the way because he's in the gate. So it only takes seconds to get a permission to do this. I called back and told him to start descent to, I don't know what altitude. Anyhow, I told him to throttle back and save his fuel, and he was here at all altitudes between his position and Lachlan. And to call me every 2 minutes. Well, like two, he kept calling me all the time. And I checked his heading, maybe a change of degree or so. And all the time, he throttled back. Back and saved his gas and still maintained his airspeed having a grad descent.
Wow.
He had never made it. Well, he called me up on the telephone and hauled him into the operations building. I'm sure he'd have kissed me if I'd have been there because he was the happiest fellow you ever seen. And, well, I saved several while I was out there. There was a number of them would get lost during bad weather.
Was this more secure than in that material?
No, we didn't do that very often, but they, if possible, do it. And I think it was such an unusual situation that we really did it. And we had written reports of the conversation that we got to read. And I don't remember now the exact wording of this year's conclusion of the Board of Inquiry, you know, when they have airplane crash, mm-hmm. they go out and try to discover. But I know the conclusion was that at 15,000 feet he ran out of oxygen. And the last words he said is, "I'm closing in on the object. It's gigantic and it's metallic." Now that's the last words that he transmitted that we heard.
Mm-hmm. Did you actually hear his transmission?
Yeah.
Oh, you did hear his
we
transmission?
Heard the transmission. Now, he don't, he's not looking at the moon, and he's not looking at the planet Venus. If he says it's metallic and it's gigantic, you can't look out there and say that Venus looks gigantic to you. And we're having a difficulty, we're implying at the rate that it's climbing. See, it was low when he first observed it, and it started climbing, and he started climbing.
Were you there when this started?
Huh?
Were you there when this all started happening?
Yeah, this was sometime in the afternoon, I think. I don't remember what it was, forenoon or afternoon,
uh-huh.
but I was on duty, and it must have been the afternoon. See, we worked the unusual hours as far as any normal place of occupation. There would be days that we'd work 16 hours. But you got it compensated with time off. It was no strain. I've worked 24-hour days out there because during the day, it's not likely that anybody's going to get lost. The only thing they call you for is a position report and a weather report. They want to tell you where they're at, and they want to know what the weather is at Columbus or between Columbus and their destination, because I've got a sheet that long. It's all in code so that they can get all this. You have to learn to read the weather code. And you can tell them what the weather is at different destinations around. So,
were you working one of these long days?
I think I was. I think that's why I happened to be on duty both times. Or it may have been that I went out early to, I had a garden out there. Since there was very little work to be done, really. It was only be there when you needed. I mean, it's like the fire department. You sit around and play cards and dominoes and everything mm-hmm. else, but there was a fire, and then you were busy. Well, we done the same thing. I could work my garden. I raised corn, watermelons, and everything else out there, and hoe my path. That's better than just sitting, you know, and listening.
And it could have been that I went out early for that. No, I don't remember. 30 years from now, you tell me what you've done tonight.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Do you remember how that started, though? Do you remember at what point you became aware that this was coming in to your...
Became aware of what?
Well, at what point were you in your shack there by the runway, or were you up at the control tower?
No, I was in that shack out along the runway.
Did you just happen to turn to the right frequency to pick this up, or?
I think the tower might have alerted me. They had different frequencies than I did. I only had a couple that I could tune in common with theirs. The tower operated on a couple frequencies just for local traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And I had great big tall antennas way up in the air. Plus my directional antenna that was pretty high to find aircraft that was farther away than the tower. My range, my frequencies were different than the tower. With the exception of I could tune in on some of theirs, and they could tune in on some of mine, but we didn't all
have the same
cover the same frequency.
So you think the tower alerted you to this incoming material?
I think that's the way it happened. I wouldn't put that down as a fact.
Yeah. Do you remember what you started hearing?
No, I know that there was confusion, a couple trying to talk at the same time, and probably excitement in their voices. After it was over, there was still some discussions going on, and this direct line to Cincinnati, I talked to them down there, and they was talking to Kentucky. Now, none of this am I clear on. I don't
know. Yeah, that's a long time.
I don't. None of that stuck in my mind like the actual seeing it.
Oh,
you
right.
See something that is quite a bit out of the ordinary. It makes a larger impression on you than a conversation, regardless of what this, mm-hmm. that you're talking about.
Certainly. So, how long did this? How long after all this confusion and subsided? Did you see the object come down at Lockburn?
It was that night, and I'd just about forgotten all about it. In fact, that wasn't even on my mind. When I was laying there, I was just listening to the radio and looking out the window. And I wasn't thinking anything about the music that I was getting on the radio, or whether it was Fibber, McGee, and Molly, or what. I don't even remember what I was listening to, but I kept the AM radio on all the time. Turned down so that it didn't drown out any calls that I might get, because some of the calls you get would be far out and fairly weak.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept my receivers turned up, and anybody that would call the station close by would just about blow the cones out of the speaker, but I could get a call that was way off.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just laying there listening to the radio, looking out the window. And the first thought, which I assume that most anybody would have thought the same thing, is this looked like a ball of fire. And I thought it was an airplane falling. But before my feet really even hit the floor, I knew it wasn't, because it stopped just under the overcast, and it wasn't the shape of an airplane. I knew it was something out of the ordinary before I'd viewed it for 2 seconds. I knew it wasn't an airplane.
You knew then there had been an airplane crash that day, didn't
huh?
You knew the plane had crashed in Kentucky.
Yeah.
You were aware of that already.
Yeah.
Do you know how long that conversation went on, or all that activity went on?
In Kentucky?
In Kentucky.
No. I don't think it lasted very long. I would say... I didn't get it all. It could have been going on before I heard any of it. And he had crashed
before the conversations terminated because there were other aircraft flying. He was ordered not to, I didn't hear this, I heard it. This is what happened through channels later on, that he was told not to close in with it, to break off at 10,000 feet. And he was evidently above 10,000 feet at the time. Now, whether his aircraft had better climbing ability or whether he was originally above the other aircraft, he wasn't the only aircraft involved. See, there was two others. And maybe he was higher to start with, or maybe he noticed it first and started the pursuit first. But however it happened, see, I have no idea. I didn't get in any of this. But they said that he was ordered to break off the contact if he hadn't closed in with it at 10,000 feet. But he went to 15, and he said if he was at 15,000 and closing, it's gigantic. It's metallic. And that was the last words he said.
You heard that.
Yeah. Okay. That's why I say now, I don't know whether it was gigantic or monstrous, but I'm 99% sure it was gigantic, that the word he used.
Were you aware at that time, you see, one of the explanations that's been given for Mantell, the case, there apparently was a, as I understand it, there was a base down near Cincinnati where they were launching these high-altitude balloons. And it's my understanding that they were used at that time for reconnaissance over Russia. They were launching them up into the upper atmosphere, and they were going with cameras over the Soviet Union, which in, at that time, of course, that would have been a highly classified job. And one explanation of Mantell was that he was following one of these things, that he was closing on one of
those. I don't think so. I think had he had been an idiot, he might not have been able to have told the balloon. But a combat pilot with as many hours as he had to make captain, you don't make captain just as soon as they pin the wings on you or before you learn to fly, was familiar, as I was at the time, which we had to take familiarization courses the same as the pilots did, where they flash airplane on a screen for some small part of a second and you identify it. And we had to do that while I was in the Air Force so that we didn't shoot down one of our own planes. You'd get maybe a tenth of a second or a fifth of a second of a silhouette of an airplane or a picture of an airplane, and you had to identify it in that length of time. You're not a complete amateur with the types of aircraft planes, and you know that there's weather balloons, and you know that they're doing that when he's flying in this vicinity all the time. He's surely been made aware that we're launching balloons over here 200 miles east of you. Be careful and don't...
Were you aware of those, were you personally aware of those balloons at that time?
I knew. I didn't know that the purpose it was using for, but I did know that we were using some of those high altitude balloons, but I didn't know what for.
Mm-hmm.
And they're similar to these that they've put up today, that you know, have a little bit of gas in the top, and they're great big and long, and give them room for expansion as they go up. Mm-hmm. I know they were shaped similar to that. In fact, we knew that there was balloons in the vicinity of Columbus here several times.
Were there any, to your knowledge, were there any balloons up that day? Those big balloons up?
I don't think there was that day.
What do you mean?
I don't know one way or the other, but pilots that were flying the days that the balloons are launched are told ahead of time, because they don't want you to take a couple million dollars out here and run into a balloon that would destroy the aircraft and destroy their balloon, their research.
Where were they launched from? Do you remember exactly?
Not exactly, but I think Clinton, Clinton Air Base, down here had some. And they launched balloons at different areas to cover different sections. I mean, if they wanted the balloon to go one direction, they had to launch it at a different place mm-hmm. than if they wanted it to go someplace else. And we launched weather balloons all the time. And damn sure the weather balloons always went downwind. They didn't go upwind like this object could I see.
Yeah, that was the oddity, or that was the impossibility of some of those explanations. Do you know what the shape of the object was that Mantell reported? Do you remember him talking about its shape?
It was supposed to be the same as one of our seen, a perfect sphere. It was a... Now, he didn't say it, but I heard it. I got this from either the paper that I read, or by word of mouth, or from an individual, or else I got it over the telephone from Cincinnati, or Clinton Air Base. Somebody I was talking to. It was supposed to be a sphere, but I didn't hear him say it. Now, they have tapes, I think, of his entire conversation. I don't know whether you could ever get a hold of one of them or not.
The Blue Book files have been released.
The what?
The Blue Book files have been released
yeah.
in Washington as a National Archive. They did expunge all names of people from it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether the Mantell tape should be a part of the Blue Book files or not.
Well, it's bound to be.
Imagine
your report. Blue Book investigated it.
I imagine your report was in there.
I imagine it is because I've heard it mentioned in some different books that I've read. But none of the details. And, in fact, one of them I read wasn't a true representation of it.
Where was that?
I don't remember now the discrepancy. But I told Lillian at the time that that wasn't.
I think that was the Menzel book, I think she told me.
Think of what?
Menzel was an astronomer at Harvard.
Menzel, to me, that's the biggest damn nut there is.
Yeah, well, he recently died, but I think that was in his first book, if I'm not mistaken. I think he had some. She told me that. I don't recall it myself.
Yeah,
I don't have a copy of it.
Might be it, because he took up in an airplane and took one ride and saw what he called a sun dog, a reflection or something. Well, that makes him an expert now. He took one airplane ride and just be like you taking one automobile ride and seeing the reflection of the bike in your rear view mirror or in your window. You can have a temporary illusion. Looking out your car window, you see a light out there. But that may be an airplane's reflection long ways off. But it don't take you long to determine that it is an airplane. And if you look up and you see Venus looking exceptionally bright, or maybe Jupiter or something, you're not going to say the first thing that is a flying saucer, that's all it took. But at the same time, if you see something that occupies more of an area in the sky, bigger than the moon, and you know it's only 1,200 feet away, you're going to know for a fact that it isn't Venus
mm-hmm.
or Jupiter or an airplane landing lights or something. Now, with your everyday work, and my everyday work for 4 years in the Air Force.
What did you do in the Air Force?
Huh?
What did you do in the Air Force? Were you
I was an instrument flying instructor.
Oh, so you were a pilot then?
Yeah, I would say that I was an operator and a gunner, and I checked out the pilots on their instrument rating. And this was in a sequence, and I spent quite a number of hours in the air. And I know night flying, the stars, and I'm not about to be confused the stars at the time I'm talking about.
Yeah.
When you're doing this same job every day and night, under all conditions, weather conditions, and you've seen lightning, and you've seen reflections, and you've seen if you want to call them heat inversions, you can see the reflection of the sun glow. You can see the rainbow, the complete circle of the rainbow. You don't have to see an arc. And there's quite a number of phenomena that you get familiar with. When you see one that isn't familiar, and you can compare it with all of your past that you are familiar with, and you know it doesn't conform to any of them, you know it's something different. Mm-hmm. And the one at Lockford is the one that's outstanding, as far as I'm concerned, that I know some facts about it, that it can't be the balloon, it can't be a planet, it can't be the moon, and it's not a light down on the ground shining up against the overcast. And I know of a lot of things that it isn't, but I can't tell you what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was an unidentified flying object, but whether it was a spacecraft from a planet a few light years away, or whether it originated here on Earth, if it originated here on Earth, we've got a source of power, and we've got materials that'll stand a lot more stress than anything I've ever seen. And if it's human passengers in that thing, we've got inertia overcome, and nothing could stand that acceleration or deceleration in anything that we've got today that I'm familiar with.